Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa. How are you?
I am doing well, but I want to hear how you are doing because you had a really great weekend this past weekend. And I will say, first of all, the weather here was beautiful and perfect and reminds us that spring is coming. It may be a false spring here. We always joke about our false spring here in the DC area where we get our hopes up and then we get whammied with like a little bit more winter, but spring is coming and it was a beautiful weekend last weekend. So I would love for you to share with me, because we haven't really had a chance to talk about it, and with our listeners, what you did last weekend.
Yeah, so I'm super excited to share that I ran my first race beyond a 5K on Sunday. I ran the Reston 10 miler, which is a 10 miler I've run pretty much every year building up to Boston. And it's always the first Sunday in March. I love the course because it emulates Boston very much with a lot of generous downhill, but some really hard uphill. And I thought about running it about a month ago. And like everything else right now with how I'm treating my running post ACL surgery, I can't really plan for anything because I need to make sure week to week that I'm appropriately absorbing the mileage I'm putting in and not feeling extra fatigued. And that's important because I don't want to have a setback. And so how I've been treating my running since my setback in August, where I had built up to this wonderful weekly mileage of 40 to 45, and I was doing long runs and set on running a Boston qualifier in early September. And then, of course, I went away on vacation and my knee swelled and I realized that I wasn't ready to do life fully. And therefore, I had no business running high mileage, shut myself down and started rebuilding again in early November. So since then, I've been building by running all easy, easy mileage. And each week I build and then the next week I take away to absorb that mileage. And I'm just taking my sweet time. And I've now built up to almost 40 miles and running a few 5Ks, which I've talked about on the podcast here, just to kind of each month get a measurement of how I'm doing, not really thinking of them as much as races, but more as time trials, which sort of assess my progress. And I went into this 10-mile race on Sunday, deciding to run it not only because of what you mentioned, that the weather was good. A friend of mine, Jen Schwartz, was running it too. So it was nice to go with someone. And also with sort of a fresh outlook of, I don't have to compare my times to what I've done year after year in this race because I'm in a completely new category now. I am recovering from a major injury and I haven't run any race beyond a 5K since that injury. And this is going to be a big test. I didn't even have an idea of what pace I could run because while, of course, we can all stick our times into a pace calculator and assess what we could do, that's really kind of a false equivalency for me because I just don't know how my knee was going to feel. So when the gun went off, I just decided to run based on how I feel. And if I end up slowing down, no big deal. But I also didn't want to run in fear and worry because I do have mileage now. I have been running for many months consistently and I've been feeling pretty good. So my long runs and my easy runs have been in the pace range of anywhere between 9:30 and 11 minute miles during my training. And I've been doing 5Ks in like the 22 to 23 minute range, which is like sevens. So I knew I had speed in me, but I had no business using a pace calculator because I just had no idea. So I started going and I felt good and I didn't do anything to push too hard. And then by like mile three, I was in a groove and I felt almost relieved because at that point I was in the zone of I've raced now longer than anything I've done since injuring myself in November of 2022. And that's pretty exciting. So by mile four, I was thrilled because my knee felt okay. And the only pain I was feeling was just what we all feel in a race, heavy breathing and just like trying to not bust a lung while also maintaining a pace that you can sustain for at least an hour, because a 10-mile race is not a 5K or 10K. And the hills were hard, and the downhill particularly for me is hard. I've got to work on downhill more. I haven't been because I've been babying my knee and running down the hills in this race. I held back. I wasn't speedy on the downhill like I typically would be because I didn't want to feel uncomfortable and I didn't want to worry. I just kept my form, kept an even effort, and didn't try to push on the downhill. And then on the uphills, it was almost a relief because I have strong glutes and from all this strength training, and I could push it more on the uphill. So I was doing just the opposite of what I would advise our runners, which is take it easy on the uphill, even effort, and go as fast as you can on the downhill with even effort. I wasn't doing that myself. But at the end, I ended up crossing the finish line in 118. And my goal, if I felt good, was to break 120. Typically in this race, on a good day, I'm running anywhere between a 111 and a 114. I wasn't disappointed at all. I felt like it was a PR because I was
It
able to
is a PR.
maintain.
It's your post.
Exactly.
When and the
I
when's the last was the rest in 10 miler the last one you did before COVID? I feel like was that the last one?
yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I
Yes, good
remember that was the
memory.
last one that you did before COVID. Yeah.
Yes, I raced that race like the week before the world shut down. I
Yeah, I
remember I had
remember.
a
I remember
really
your
good
picture. You
race.
had a and you had a really good picture from it, I remember. Like I remember it being a very good experience. So yeah, so nice to see you.
So I crossed the finish line and I saw the time. I was so thrilled because that data tells me I'm able to run without any speed work, a nice 7:45 pace for over an hour. And it also tells me that my body is able to withstand hard terrain. It was not a flat, gentle race. And also, I can really enjoy racing, even if my times are not nearly what I know I'm capable of doing, but can't right now. That's okay. I'm still really enjoying the process. I am really enjoyed running with other people, passing people, having people pass me. Like, I loved it. And I wasn't sad at
And on a
all.
nice day too. You're
On a
so like,
really
it's such a
nice
beautiful
day.
day.
But that's been part of my fear, honestly, about doing races longer than a 5K are those things, hurting myself, not being able to sustain a pace that doesn't feel to me depressing, and also the feeling of running with others and having that competition that would make me uncomfortable because I'm a post-injury runner, but I didn't feel any of that on in last week. And I think part of it is because I waited so long to do this. I've waited months to do a race longer than a 5K, and because I'm just not I have no expectations of myself right now other than to do my best. And my best is my PR, and my PR is all I can give myself. And I'm still really truly on cloud nine about it. I feel like I'm back in a place where I can sign up for some races and not feel trepidation or like I'm in like this imposter syndrome area where I'm trying to be the runner that I was and I'm not anymore. I don't feel that way at all. I'm a different runner than I was before, but I'm still me and I can still go out there with my core runner values and have a great time and take care of business in the way I want to and see the results of all of this work I've been putting in. Without the work is boring. I mean, I'm barely running with other people. I run a very, as I mentioned, easy pace and a lot of the same routes. It has not been exciting at all. And it was really nice to see some of the fruits of my labor. So thanks for indulging me, allowing me to share my story. And for anyone out there who's injured, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And just know that how you define yourself post-injury is good enough. You don't have to compare yourself to before. You can still be the runner you are now and still have a great time and a great time.
I love that. And I have two takeaways from your, you know, your experience. First is that consistency and just keeping your head down and putting in the work. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be showy. It doesn't have to be an impressive workout. It doesn't have to be anything like that. It's consistency, keeping your head down, doing the boring stuff, right? Strength isn't very exciting for most of us. The easy runs on the same routes are not always exciting. It's like, feels like a grind sometimes, but that certainly I think pays off. And I think the mindset is so big, and that really kind of makes the difference between somebody who's going to consistently be feel disappointed and feel kind of depressed about where they are versus somebody who's going to be able to experience the joys that we get from running, right? So that's the best thing about running is what we that feeling of joy that we get, and you can still get that regardless of where your pace is compared to where it was before. And I frankly think you did pretty darn well for coming, you know, a 10 miler coming off of, you know, your first 10 miler back after and first time back there in like 4 years, right? March 2020 would have been the last time. So 4 years post COVID, post injury. So I think those are really important takeaways for anybody, not even people who are going through injury, but people who just aren't where they used to be. It's you can still go out there, you can still enjoy running. Don't let that rob you of all this wonderful stuff that we get from running. So thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you, Coach. I appreciate
Anytime, no
your
charge.
feedback.
So today's kind of a big day for us. This is incredible to me. This is our 200th podcast episode, which to me is just I'm gonna flash back to 2019 when we started this podcast, and you said, why don't we do a podcast, you know, about getting on preparation for the Boston Marathon? And I thought, who is gonna listen to this? You know, how are we gonna record this? How do you even make a podcast? It was so foreign to me. And I thought, every time we recorded, I thought, like, who is listening to this? It's like maybe our friends and our family are listening, and that is it. And then the first time we went to Boston after that first series, that first season that we did, and had a meetup where we thought maybe we'd have five or six people come meet up with us, and we had like 30 or 40 people come from all over the world. And so from going from there to going to where we are now, and having this to look forward to every week to do with you, and thinking back through the years and the episodes and all of the amazing dynamic, diverse guests that we've had, and the relationships we've built with a lot of those guests that, you know, we have on the podcast that we end up staying in touch with, that we learn from, that we continue to follow. That to me is like, I'm so glad that we started this 4 years ago, and that we kind of took a chance and got outside of our comfort zone, because we are not professional podcasters. This is not what we do for a living. We are coaches and decided to kind of do this on the side. So Julie, tell me, what do you like when you look back at the last 200 episodes, tell me your takeaways that you have.
So I've been thinking about this too. First of all, I just want to say, Lisa, one of the joys for me, and this isn't a takeaway, but just a comment, is just coming on here and talking to you. If people could see how we work, I mean, we are constantly in contact, but it's all business. It's coaching. We are always working and having the luxury each week of catching up with you in a way that is meaningful, because we want to make the conversation meaningful if people are going to listen, but it's just been really special. So I want
Well,
to
I'll
say that.
also just interject really quickly that what people don't hear is that we say, like, okay, we're going to record the intro at 2 o'clock. And here we are at like almost 2:45, because we spend the first 45 minutes just catching up with each other. And right. So I always like budget more time, because I know that there's no way I'm going to want to get out, like get on and just record an intro and get off with you. So that, right. Absolutely.
For sure. It's not about running. Like we're
Wow.
talking about our lives, and then we get on and talk about, yeah, for sure. So I would say I have two takeaways. First is the process. We, as you mentioned, we didn't know what we were doing. We still don't. And we're not professionals. We are coaches. And I would say what I learned from this is sometimes progress is perfection. And for us, perfection is good enough. We don't have the technical support and equipment and the special podcast quarters and whatnot. We just don't. And instead, we just want to bring folks the best guests and the best content we can. We know sometimes our sound isn't the best. We get it. But for us, like, this is such a labor of love, and we know we're doing meaningful work, and it may not be perfect, but we're so I'm so proud of the impact we've had because we took that risk, even though we knew what we were putting out there initially wouldn't be perfect. And we've gotten better, and I'm sure we could be much better, but I just am so grateful that we took that leap. And then the second takeaway I would say is we know what we don't know. Every time we have a guest on this podcast, we learn something. And we have had the luxury of having all of these incredible resources, all of these incredible guests come on and give us information that we didn't know before, or maybe we knew, but it was a different take. And so by us being able to absorb that information and recognize that there's no ego, we want to know this information. We will never pretend to know everything ever. It's just made us better coaches and in some instances better people because of, as you mentioned, the diverse amount of people, information, different angles, and what a joy and a benefit we've had to have a front row seat to so many folks and experts with that information. So those are my two takeaways. How about you?
Well, along those same lines of the experts and the guests and the really inspirational people we've had on over the last 200 episodes, what has really always been remarkable to me is that of willingness of guests to come on. We've had big goals and big dreams and have said to each other a lot of times, wouldn't it be cool to have somebody on? And we say, all right, let's just take a stab at it and send them an email or reach out through social media. And they write back right away and say, sure, no problem. I mean, Catherine Switzer is one of the earliest ones that comes to mind, where the first season we were recording, and I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have Catherine Switzer on our podcast? So many of our, so many really like just running celebrities or people who you think might not be accessible. And we've reached out to them, and immediately they are the kindest, nicest, most accommodating people who say, yes, I would love to talk to you. And then that to me has always been just a good lesson that I've learned, is that you don't know unless you try. The answer is always going to be no if you don't ask. So I'd say most of the guests we've reached out to ask to be on our podcast have come back and said yes. With very few people either don't respond or say no. I don't think we've ever had anyone say no. Maybe people haven't responded, but so now I always feel like, whoever we think we might want to have on, let's just reach out. It can't hurt. And we found that the overwhelming majority of people in the running community are generous and kind and really awesome to talk to. So I definitely think that's my kind of lesson that I've taken away from this experience. And like I said before, you don't know if you don't try. Like the fact that we went out on the limb and tried this, 4 years, five years ago now, 5 years ago, when podcasting wasn't a huge thing. There's so many more podcasts now, especially running podcasts weren't as big. The fact that we went out and did that, like all of the benefits that we've gotten by just meeting all these guests and talking to guests and connecting with listeners, really have been something I couldn't have anticipated.
Yeah, and speaking of listeners, we wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for our listeners. We know people are listening, and if folks weren't listening, we wouldn't still be doing this. So this whole
Maybe we
project,
would. We'd just be talking every week and
just
put it
each
out out
other.
there. Right. No,
Hi, Mom.
it's I don't even think my mom listens. So
My mom might not listen anymore. I know initially she was listening to every episode, but she's busy in the villages doing her
right.
thing with
Lots of
all her
stuff going on.
activities.
Yeah, I think my
She's
dad listens.
busy.
My dad does listen sometimes. If my dad is listening, we shout out to him, but I don't think my mom
Jack.
listens. Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like I continue to be, I know you do too, stunned when people will say, I love your podcast. I listen. And we don't take that for granted at all. We know how many podcasts are out there. We see it. We listen to podcasts too. And we understand sort of the logic. You'll start a run. You'll look and see, oh, what should I listen to today? And people pick our episode to listen. We don't take that for granted. We're grateful. And so thanks to everyone out there for continuing to listen. And if you haven't yet, and there's a lot of listeners out there, could you leave us a review? Or share our podcast, because that's the only way we can grow. And we're counting on all of you to help us continue to grow. We would so appreciate that. And we also want to mention, we've mentioned it before, we are really only talking about this on the podcast. We're offering coaching calls to prepare people for upcoming spring marathons. And so if you've got a marathon in 4 to 6 weeks, now is the perfect time to reach out. Just check out the website, runfartherandfaster.com, or you can email us at julieandlisa@runfartherandfaster.com to sign up for a coaching call, which will include race prep and a discussion about your training, what you can do to optimize your training for race day, and any other questions you have. So yeah.
I wanted to really quickly mention too, as you were talking about listeners, I've talked to a lot of people, a lot of friends who are not runners who say, oh yeah, I heard about, you know, what's been going on with you on your podcast. And so I think we both really appreciate people who don't even run, who listen, who know us or just want to keep up with our lives, who listen to our podcast. And I always say, I wish everybody had a podcast. So I wish all my friends had podcasts, because that's what I would listen to, is to kind of catch up on their lives, to hear just, you know, if they were just chit-chatting about their lives. I would really like to know, because I always feel like it's a little unbalanced when people are like, oh yeah, I heard about your trip to Argentina. Like, I listened to your podcast, and they're not even runners. So really appreciate that. I mean, because come on, if you're not a runner and you're listening to our podcast, like that's pretty nice.
Hi, Jenny. That's my best friend from home. She doesn't run.
Yeah, she Melissa. Melissa runs, but she, every time I see her, she's like, yeah, I heard about that on your podcast. So shout out to Melissa. So she does run. So, but still, I really appreciate it. So I'm kind of coming back full circle. Here we are again in sort of prep time for Boston Marathon. So we've been featuring some of the BAA staff, which we've been, again, lucky enough to have on our podcast when we reached out to the BAA, and they said, absolutely. We have, you know, several people who are happy to talk to you about this year's race. So again, ask, and people are willing to come on the podcast. And today we have Katie Hawks, and we've actually been working with Katie Hawks. She is our kind of liaison and contact for our expo panel that we have. Katie is the director of brand and experiential marketing for the BAA. So that means that she really does all of the non-race related things. So Fan Fest, the expo, anything outside of you know, the post-race party, all of the fun stuff that goes on. And Katie is a native of Boston. She actually started her career with the Massachusetts Convention Center Authority. And then, you know, so she's very familiar with the Boston area, with the Boston Marathon, and then really seamlessly slipped into this position and gets to plan all the fun stuff, which has really, over the years that we've been at Boston, has expanded tremendously. We noticed it particularly when FanFest started several years ago during COVID, but all of the sort of supplemental activities surrounding Boston Weekend, which really frankly make the Boston Marathon experience. It's not just a race that you're going for, it's the whole entire weekend. And she is the guru, the woman in charge. She's got an amazing staff, but she is in charge of all of that. So, you know, along those lines, we are going to have a couple events in Boston when we are there. We will be at the expo at 2 p.m. Julie, do you want to talk about our panel discussion that we're having?
Yeah. Okay. One thing about Katie, there's a great story that she shares about Des Linden. So definitely, if you're a Des fan, you'll particularly love this episode. She was so great. So we are super excited this year. Once again, we will be at the expo on Sunday. We'll be hosting a panel with our dear friend, Cherie Louise Turner, host of Women's Running Stories. We have three amazing guests this year who will be on our panel. They are Kelly Bruno, Ari Hendricks, and Bree Boomer. And they are all amazing athletes in their own right. And we will be sending out materials about this and promoting it. But if you are anywhere near the expo, please come. We would love to see you in person. We would love your support. And more importantly, you will love this panel about these three courageous trailblazing women. And we're so honored to be co-hosting it once again with Cherie from Women's Running Stories. We will also be hosting that same day, Sunday morning at 9 a.m., a shakeout run, same place in Boston Common. We'll be putting out more information about that. And as in every year, we will be handing out some very special goodies. We always, at our shakeout runs, come with a Run Farther and Faster embroidered swag item. And this year's item is wonderful, as the items have been in past years. So if you come,
keep it a surprise,
Yeah,
we did just see a proof and it looks awesome. So we are very excited. I'm personally very excited about it.
So please join us for either of those events or both in Boston. And we would love to meet you in person and see you again for those who have joined us in the past for either event.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's turn it over to Katie. Like you said, she's got some really cool, fun stories to tell, and some, you know, kind of background information that I don't think a lot of people have ever heard. And just the whole scoop on what goes into putting together everything that goes on around Boston Marathon weekend. So if you're coming to spectate, if you're coming to run, if you just live in the Boston area, or if you're just hoping to come to Boston one day, or just hear about what goes on during the Boston Marathon weekend, I think it's a great episode. And just Katie's just an awesome person. So just listening to Katie's story, I think is really fun. I know both of us really enjoyed talking to her, and we're looking forward to seeing her when we're up in Boston.
Yeah. So Lisa, happy 200th episode, and I hope you have a great week.
You too, Julie. Bye.
Bye.
Katie Hawks, welcome to the Run Farther and Faster podcast. We are so excited to have you here today. We are talking this week, or over a course of a couple of weeks, to some of our fabulous BAA staff. And you are the Director of Brand and Experiential Marketing, which really basically means all the really fun stuff around the marathon weekend. And we were talking before we started recording, saying that Julie and I always come and we enjoy ourselves so much at the expo and the fan fest and all of the other things that surround the weekend. And we get to Sunday night and we go, oh no, we have to run tomorrow. So the race is awesome too, but one of the really great things about Boston is just the experience of the whole weekend, which can be enjoyed not only by runners, but by their fans that come, their supporters that come, folks in the Boston area. So really it's open to everybody. So, which is great. And it's just such an important part of the vibe of the entire race weekend. So why don't you start out just telling us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and how you ended up in this position and what the position does.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you guys. I am a tried and true Boston native. I was born and raised in South Boston, so I'm a Southie girl. I currently live in Dorchester with my husband and my dog, Bonnie. But I have been working in the events industry for, I think I calculated the other day, it's definitely over 15, probably not 20 yet, but a long time. Right out of college, I spent 11 years working for the Convention Center Authority in Boston. So I was planning events for other companies that were coming to Boston to plan conventions. So that's when I fell in love with events. I've been pretty passionate about helping bring people's events to life for a long time. But then towards my end of my time at the Convention Center, I was on a team that created an outdoor event space called the Lawn on D. So I was able to learn about bringing my own ideas to life, which has always really been something that, you know, event people want to do. That's great to take other people's ideas, but it's even better to think of them yourself and bring them to life. So as I was doing that, I really wanted to change my career and focus on bringing my own ideas to life. I've been passionate about sports my whole life. I was raised playing volleyball. And so being in the sports industry has always been something that I've been passionate about. So I just applied for a job at the BAA, and it was sort of a perfect time for the BAA because we were going through such a transitional time where the BAA was bringing on more staff members and being able to really start focusing on everything outside of the 26.2 miles that is around Huffington to Boston. So my job at the BAA is to create all the experiences that happen around the marathon, not just for the runners, but for Bostonians, for their friends and family, for anybody that's here to cheer on their runner or just excited about being able to see Boston happen around us. As a local, it's always been something that I've followed. And so I was really excited to be a part of it. So my job really is about all the things that surround the race. I could tell you where the porta potties are, but it's not my job, which is nice. I can tell you where all the parties and the fun events are. It's basically what my team does, as well as focusing on the look and feel of all of our races and events. The other part of my team really manages making sure the BAA brand is represented accurately across every asset digitally and at our events.
When did you start working for the BAA?
So I've been with the BAA for 6 years now. So
okay.
So 2018. Yeah.
So your first Boston was in 2018 or... Yes. Oh my God.
It was, you know what? I could tell you a funny story, and yeah. I don't think a lot of people publicly have heard this story, but I am a reality TV lover. And right around that time, there was a TV show called Siesta Key, and there's the opening song is a song by Carly Rae Jepsen called Cut to a Feeling. I was at the finish line. It was torrential pouring, and I was still learning my role. And we didn't have the same sort of finish line experience that we do now. And so it was always just somebody pressing play to music and not thinking about it. But Jack Fleming, our CEO, looked to me and said, "You got to get in there and tell them what song to play. Des Linden's going to finish, and this needs to be not something like hardcore rock and roll." And I went in there and looked at this, you know, audio guys list, and I was like, "Oh gosh, I don't know any of these songs." And so I saw Carly Johnson's "Cut to a Feeling" on there, and I was like, "This is a great song. It's fun. It's a woman singing." So I picked it, and she finished. And there was, you know, so much going on in the street that not many people heard it, just because the noise is so loud. But later on in the day, my sister called me and was like, "Tell me you picked that song for Des Linden to finish." And I was like, "I did. I don't even think I've had this conversation with Des before," but it makes me laugh just thinking about how like casual that was. But Des's win was so amazing. Like, it really set the tone for me understanding why the marathon's so important. Like, it, you know, and now we spend way more attention to detail on what songs are being played when. I can tell you that our entire team thinks about it every day. But at that point, 6 years ago, definitely wasn't at the top of my list of things I thought I needed to do at my job.
That is the best story. And somehow Des needs to know this story, that Katie Hawks created her theme song when she crossed the Boston finish line and won the entire race in the worst torrential downpour in record history. So you didn't run from the job after 2018, you stayed.
No.
So tell us what has changed. I mean, we've seen with our own eyes a lot of the experiential changes since 2018, but tell us some of the biggest changes you've implemented.
Yeah. So we are learning as we go. We don't take for granted that, you know, we have a tried and true audience. So we're constantly looking for feedback on what works and what doesn't. So we're not heads down. This is the idea we're going with. So over the past 6 years, we've really been like testing the water with ideas and trying to bring more things to life to expand the weekend. Cause like I said to you guys earlier, I am not a runner, but I understand and I have full appreciation for how much work charity runners and qualifiers have to do just to get to the start line. And so it is such a big part in people's lives that we want to make sure it's a party all weekend long for them. So over the last 6 years, we've really focused on bringing the expo into a place where it's more about documenting your experience, less about, you know, the smaller things, throwing, you know, stuff at you at every moment, really allowing people to document their experience. So really trying to focus on photo ops and panels and really allowing people to do more at the expo. We've brought the panels into the show floor and we're now bringing our pro athletes there more often and recording podcasts that are really exciting about, you know, with, you know, that marathoners want to hear and they want to see during the weekend. So it's really been a full, we still have work to do on the expo. I will not deny that. But, you know, it really has been about, you know, making it an experience versus just a selling experience there, which is important for us. And then 5 years ago, we created FanFest, which was, something that I brought with me as an idea. It's not a new industry event. I mean, or, you know, it's not a new concept in the events industry, but haven't really seen anything in the running world where it's more of an outdoor festival feel. So Copley Square was the perfect place. When I first started, Copley Square was in the industry what we call a boneyard, just basically a place to store all your equipment on race day. And literally that's what the BAA used Copley Square for. And what we identified was we could just move that equipment somewhere else. I know that Lauren on our operations team would be like, it took more than just moving it out of the way. But it allowed us to create more opportunities for our sponsors to interact with the runners. It allowed them to have a different type of touch point because the expo was so sell product heavy. It allowed our sponsors to think about, you know, how they're interacting in more of a memorable way with the audience. And then also something different for the community and fans. So fans and more general speaking programs and entertainment that could appeal to the broader audience and not just the people that are going to run on Monday. So we've really just been focusing on that, as well as programming at the finish line. We know that everyone wants to go to the expo, then they're going to take their bib and they're going to walk to the finish line and they're going to stand on the finish line and take their photo. And then what is the next step is going to the other side and going to Copley Square into FanFest. This year, we have some changes with FanFest that are very exciting, but that's sort of what our thought was, is what's the runner journey and how do we enhance every moment of their experience?
Yeah, we have a lot of thoughts that we've been talking about. We were excited to hear all these changes. Yeah. And first, I want to start with the expo, because that's one thing that sure. as runners that we've noticed, the expo has evolved a lot over the years. Like years ago, you go and it was like it was both sides. You could spend probably hours and hours in there buying things and different vendor. I mean, it was a little overwhelming to where the point at some point, you get to you're like, I can't, I'm gonna have to leave. It's a little overwhelming. Whereas now it's a little bit, there's been a shift. So it's been really helpful to hear kind of the reason behind that. So talk to us a little bit about the expo and the direction it's headed in and what it's going to look like this year.
Yeah. For us to be able to highlight our sponsors more, the products that we put our name with, our partnership team does a great job making sure our brand is aligned with the right brands. And so for us to be able to highlight them more, we did need to give them some breathing room. And really allow them to have more space to activate. And that's sort of what dictated the transition of everything. The Heinz Convention Center, where I used to work in my past job, is not the best convention center in the world, but it is conveniently located. So we will be there as long as we can, but we are at the mercy of a building that is a little bit older. So having to spread out sort of limited how much other stuff we could have. But in that, we know we're making certain people unhappy, but in turn, we are trying to create more experiential things via our partners and our own brand. So bringing in our archive display that we did last year, really allowing people to see us as a brand and be able to document their experience, having enough space when you pick up your bib that you can, enjoy that moment with your family and not be crammed into a hallway. So trying to split the hallway up was just a big deal. Like dividing bib pickup into two hallways allowed us to give more breathing room to the runners as they go to get it and hopefully create less lines. We know that lines are always going to happen no matter how hard we try, but trying to make a little bit more space. Also allow Adidas to bring in as much product as they possibly can, because that is the commemorative item that everyone wants, that we want people to have as well, because we know that we go to all these other races across the world and we see our jackets everywhere. And that's the badge of honor, right? Like you wear your medal for, some people wear it for a week after, right? And that's great. But your jacket, the celebration jacket, is that commemorative item. So giving Adidas more space to bring in more product allows more people to have it, because 30,000 runners, 30,000 jackets alone take up a lot of space. So really the expo has been an evolution of allowing the brands we work with to be more experiential and more celebratory for our runners versus just quick hits.
So that's a great way of putting it, because we were puzzled the first year after COVID when the race was in full force, why the expo was quote unquote empty, but really it's not. It's that the purpose of the expo from the perspective of the BAA has changed from being a shopping experience to a Boston Marathon experience. So can you share some of the things that runners can look forward to in the expo and what those experiences will look like?
Yeah, totally. And I will say that the post-COVID world, or the year post-COVID, was tough for all brands. So that year after COVID, when we were spreading people out, the sponsors were fighting against recession and, not having the ability to make bigger booths and stuff like that. So there has been sort of a resurgence of our partners, which is great. And this year, I really feel like we're going to have a lot to offer people. The Adidas booth is going to be the largest it's ever been. our new presenting sponsor of the expo. It's the Bank of America Boston Marathon Expo. So the bank will have a really large presence. And what's great about our partnership with them is that they're right on board with investing in our activations. They really are putting a lot of time into this massive booth that is going to be full of photo ops and full of celebratory items for people to get, which is going to like enhance our expo times 10. So the Adidas booth and the Bank of America booth will be the biggest piece that I think people will notice the change in, just because they're going to be so much larger. And then our other sponsors really are stepping up. We see Adidas doing even a second booth inside the other space for customization. So like there's more stuff happening. And then for our sessions at our theater, we really are focusing on bringing more of the pro athletes into the expo, which is really great. Typically, we've tried to keep them in FanFest, but this year, bringing them into the expo to provide more opportunities for people to meet them and see them and engage with the cool, like, the coolness of them. Like, it's really fun. Like, they, you know, if you're in the Fairmont over race weekend, you can see a few pro athletes, but bringing them over to the expo is going to be really great for people to get close to them and just hear their experiences.
Oh, we're so excited to hear this because, of course, we're so thrilled and honored to be part of the panels at the expo again this year. And knowing that our panel is going to have some outstanding athletes as well, but knowing that it will be in conjunction with other athletes will be there. So people attending the expo and the panels won't be competing with trying to go to FanFest for that experience. We'll all be in the same place. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really exciting. It's really bringing everybody under one roof. And I think that some of the other changes we're making are really making the expo and FanFest two separate identities now completely, which is what we wanted initially. So now that FanFest has grown up and has its own identity, we don't need to have them be sort of mirror images of themselves anymore.
Before we transition to talk about FanFest, because we're very excited about that. Sounds awesome. Tell us if you were going to give runners advice on going to the expo, and we were talking about lines and inevitable. I've tried when it first opens and there's lots of lines. I've tried, you know, Fridays seem to be kind of lower line. What would your advice be just in terms of navigating the expo successfully and really fully taking advantage of that opportunity to experience everything you guys are offering?
Yeah, there's no denying the fact that it's always going to be busy. So I think plan ahead. In the next month, we will have our panels and sessions on the website. You'll probably be able to predict which ones will be busier than others, which may dictate how many people are in the expo. But if you do want to take in some of those panels, that would be a good place to start on your plan ahead. Saturday afternoon after the 5K is the great mass entrance into the expo. You know, everyone wants to run the 5K and then stroll down the street and pick up their bib. And that's great. But if you don't want to be in a crowd of everyone leaving the 5K, try to hit Friday later in the day, Sunday later in the day, knowing that, you know, it's hard to do Sunday later in the day because you probably want to start putting your feet up. But avoiding that like peak Saturday afternoon is really like my tip. And then like once you leave the expo, going outside and looking at the turn from Hereford onto Boylston and just like psyching yourself up for that. Like, you know, I think it's just really great that the expo is right there at the center of it all.
Totally agree. And again, it sounds like the perfect time to go and to the expo is about 2:00 on Sunday, which is when we're doing our panel. And you can pick up your bib right before or right after. No, that's great advice. Thank you.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about FanFest. And we also noticed that the post-race party is now moved to City Hall Plaza too. It used to be at Fenway. Yeah. I will admit, this will be my 21st year of running Boston. I've never gone to the post-race FanFest, but I think it's because I usually leave right after. My flight's usually right after. Yeah. Or I'm just like the couple of years I've stayed another day, which is a really great, we would highly recommend for people who can to stay the extra day. It's really great to stay that night and experience everything that you can post-race. And then I was just too tired to go. But so I like the idea that it seems more accessible this year. So tell us about the move to City Hall, what Fan Fest is going to look like, what the post-race party is going to look like. Tell us about that. We're very excited to hear about that.
Yeah, it is one of the things I'm most excited about because I was so terrified of Copley Square closing down for a year and a half, and then every construction project is delayed. So I was just watching them delay it and delay it. But honestly, it's forced us to spread our footprint out, which I think will help and also allow people to experience a different part of the city. We used to host our pre-race dinner at City Hall. So it's not something that people haven't experienced, but it does allow people to get a little further over, maybe explore into the North End to get their pasta as they prep. But the closing of Copley Square really forced us to look for a new plot of land that we could move FanFest to. And there's not that many in the city of Boston. But the City Hall Plaza went under a renovation that not a lot of people would typically notice, but if you're an event planner, you do, because the resources now and the way it's laid out does allow for more events to be there. We've seen, the hockey Winter Classic festival was there, and First Night was just there. So it is a good space for people to gather. FanFest will be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It'll be completely have a perimeter around it, which, will make look pretty. But the benefit of that is the Sam Adams Run Pub, which will be smack in the middle of it. You'll be able to now get a beer and walk around FanFest completely because you will be within the realm of our event, which is great because our beer garden that was after the finish line, you really had to stay inside because of permitting. But now it really does allow people to have way more fun. So we'll have a pretty great offering from all of our sponsors there. Dick's Sporting Goods is our presenting sponsor of FanFest. They are all in. They are opening a House of Sport on Boylston Street. So they are investing in Boston, which we are excited about, and bringing their brand to FanFest, which I think is a perfect addition to everything we're doing. The bank will have great activations. We've seen some really cool stuff that our partners are getting creative, which is awesome. So it'll be bands and beer and lots of fun and games all weekend long. We'll have some yoga classes every morning. We'll have some shakeout runs from there. And our goal for FanFest has always been to broaden our reach. So really offering something to everybody in the city. Not everyone wants to go to the expo, and we get that. And so offering this space and being right on the green line really does allow a broader audience to enjoy the marathon. Yeah, so it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited. It's fun to plan a beer garden that people can walk out of and walk around with a beer, and that makes my life a lot easier. Going to be a lot of fun.
So we assume though anybody can get into FanFest.
Yeah,
the beer garden got to be 21, we're assuming.
Yeah,
but
it'll be free and open to the public, very family friendly, lots of activities for all ages. All of the activations that we're seeing and designs from our partners are very family friendly. So it's going to be just a fun day for everyone. And I really think any day of the weekend would be a good day to stop by FanFest. And so when we were planning to move FanFest over to City Hall Plaza, we were investing in a lot of infrastructure over there. I used to be able to beg, borrow, and steal from the infrastructure at the finish line for FanFest. So we're investing a lot in creating a venue for ourselves. And so it really was a natural fit to move the post-race party over there. Samuel Adams is our presenting sponsor of the post-race party. So we'll also have a large beer garden tent, which I mentioned. So it really did feel like a natural fit. We're obviously going to amp it up for the post-race party and really put an overlay of celebration on it. We've asked our partners to really think about what changes in their activation after everyone runs. What is the more celebratory thing we can do for everyone? So we'll really be putting a party feel on FanFest more so than it was earlier in the day. Des Linden and Kara Goucher will be our hosts, which is awesome. I give credit to Des for, saying yes to running the marathon and then hosting a party. It'll be really great to have, you know, them give an overview of the day. I always am fascinated because, you know, people on the road for 4 hours and they don't get to hear what happened earlier in the day. And so we're really going to try to make sure everyone can relive the champions, bring them out for a toast, show highlights of what happened earlier in the day, you know, have food trucks and really let people celebrate their accomplishments because it is such a big deal.
That sounds awesome. Are you also going to guarantee all good weather for the weekend? we would like that. Katie, please put that in
you
your
guys
order.
Did ask, yeah, you guys did ask me to say what is the hardest part about my job.
So let's talk about that. What's the most challenging part of your job?
Not being able to control the weather and not being able to be everywhere at all at once. So, you know, my job is to, you know, we have some great partners who help us act, you know, be our boots on the ground for all these events. But the team at the VAA, small and mighty, want to be everywhere and see every interaction that everyone has. And so that's really is the hardest part, is not being able to be everywhere all at once. And now that we're spreading our footprint even further, I can't just hop on my scooter and scoot down to the finish line. I'm going to have to figure out how I navigate across the city hall every couple hours.
More than just rate, you know, like Lauren has race day to focus on. You've got a whole race weekend and multiple locations. So you've got a lot going on.
Yeah, we do a lot of steps. I calculated my steps 2 years ago, and I could have walked from Boston to Hopkinton and back just over the race weekend. So I do a lot of steps.
Wow. Well, you started this by telling us you're not a runner and that, you know, you're a volleyball player, you're not a runner, but you spend a lot of time on your feet. So that's,
our whole team does a lot on our feet. Yeah. It's a long weekend.
So I'm kind of thinking this through as you're talking, and you've really helped us sort of plan our weekend. So I'm just going to throw this out there. Lisa and I've done Boston many years, and I'm just thinking this through. And logically, if you're running the BAA 5K, that's near the expo. So take some time. And after the 5K, if you're a spectator running, that's your time to really take advantage of the expo. Then later that day, walk over to FanFest, enjoy a beverage. If you're running, try not to have more than one.
Yes.
And that's your Saturday. And then on Sunday, go to your shakeout run if you're going to one. Often they're in Boston Common. That's where ours is going to be. Check out FanFest after, then go back to your hotel and change, and then go to the expo Sunday afternoon for some more speakers. So that would sort of, I'm putting this together. And then of course, after the race on Monday, make sure you go to the post-race party, and it sounds like it's going to be amazing. As Lisa mentioned, we typically don't go, and it's always sounded so cool because it's at Fenway, but I have to say Fenway's not really in our path where we stay. We usually stay near the finish line, and the thought of the post-race party being where it is now near by City Hall, it's actually a lot more convenient on many levels. So it's going to be great. I can't believe Daz and Kara are hosting too. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to, you know, try to toss in as many special guests as we can, really, you know, allow people to just, you know, toast to everything they've done that day. It's going to be a good time. And yeah, I mean, other things to check out over race weekend would be the Invitational Mile, which happens on Saturday after the 5K. I think that's something that, you know, You see it if you're walking by. It's such a competitive race. It's so amazing to watch them do these laps around Boylston Street and Newbury Street. And like, I mean, I'm there at the finish line watching them do it, and it's just so impressive. It's, you know, it's pretty awesome.
And they have the kids who compete too, like the middle, like the middle school and the high school kids. That's really fun to watch.
Yeah. It's awesome. There's so much to do over race weekend, and our racing app is the way to get all the info when you're there. But really, you know, our comms team puts a lot of effort into our newsletters to make sure that everyone gets all the info we have to give, and really just keeping an eye on those newsletters as we announce things, you know, in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think that's the theme when we spoke to Lauren too, said the app and keeping the emails. And that's true. We've said this before, that the BAA is like really top of its class in communicating and organization and smooth operations, and really great, like we said, really great weekend opportunities to do outside of the race. But you've got to read You've got to read your emails. You've got to get the app. And that's all things you can do ahead of time and all things that are, you know, will be available over the next couple of months. You mentioned before, and I used to go many years ago to the pre-race, the pasta party that was at City Hall. And then I think it was after COVID, it went away. Is there any thought of bringing something like that back? Was there a reason that it went away? I know, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure people now like to do their own thing before race day, but there's no more pasta party.
No, that's a great question. And I don't know if we, you know, if you said, you did say we were really good at communicating, but I'm not sure if we really nailed it to why we did it, why we took away. COVID definitely like was, you know, we were the first year when we were first marathon, we were back from COVID. We wouldn't have let anybody eat in a room together kind of setting. But since, but really, you know, after we took some time and stepped back and looked at it, it was a great time. It was a great experience for runners to sit down and meet other runners and eat, but the caterer was great. And I used them for other events, so I would say this, but it's not, it wasn't anything super special for that moment. And Boston offers so much opportunity for that meal. And the BAA does care a lot about our economic impact outside of what we're doing. And our focus really was, you know, why would we take 8,000 people and bring them inside of City Hall instead allowing them to go out and explore the city and eat at the restaurants that we know and love? And that's really what we wanted to do, was allow for our runners to give their money to the restaurants in Boston that especially after COVID needed it the most.
Yeah,
I it was a no-brainer for us. Yeah,
I loved it for exactly the reason you said. I was telling Julie before we got on that I used to love to go and just, I didn't even care about the pasta. Like, I mean, that was fine, but you know, I didn't care about the pasta. And I remember years ago, they used to have like a competition between the different, I think, fire stations that would have, and you'd taste them and like vote on like which one. This is a long, long time ago. But what my favorite part was to just go sit at a random table. I would go by myself. This is before I knew a lot of people running the marathon. And I just go sit at a random table, and the people that I met over the years from all over the world, that was my favorite part. It was like, I didn't care about the food, but meeting people. But plenty of opportunities now to do that. We did not have a fan fest then. There were not as many opportunities as there were. Do you have any role or anything, you know, with Athletes Village or on race day before the finish party, or is that all, you know, kind of operations and
mostly, mostly operations. I deal with some of our VIP programs. My team will help manage the look and feel of those. But I also manage with, our athlete team. I help with support at the Fairmont for all of the functions for the athletes, the pro athletes. So everything in the Fairmont that happens that not a lot of people get to see is, you know, our mini athletes village for the pros, where, you know, they're sleeping in the hotel, they're eating at the hotel, they're going to technical meetings. So my team manages all of those functions for the team that manages the pros, as well as some of our special events that we do for partners and all that stuff. And then our BA gives back fundraising event that we do on Saturday night. So the Fairmont is another big piece of my work, just because it's hospitality.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the Fairmont, the secret part of Boston that us commoners, we commoners never see. Tell us a little bit about it.
I've been trying. I don't think that I'd want anybody to film me over race weekend because I'm running around so much, but I think that it, like a behind the scenes documentary would always be really great for us. And
we just talked about that with Lauren. We just said, Julie said to her, we want a documentary about how the Boston Marathon is put on. Like that is, would be incredible. That's a great idea.
And I think that like the, what happens at the Fairmont is really amazing. We've been at the Fairmont forever as our host hotel, and their team, when I came to the BAA, there wasn't a rule book for how to do my job, but the team at the Fairmont basically helped me survive year one. They are amazing. Obviously they're hospitality pros, but their team cares, everyone down to their people who go, do room service, care so passionately about hosting us over the marathon because of, you know, the history we have, that they go above and beyond for everything we do. And so we have all the professional athletes staying at the hotel. We have a bunch of our VIPs. We stay at the hotel as a team. And so we basically have the whole entire hotel as ours. So we host media press conferences. We host all the tech meetings for the pros. They eat three meals a day. We have hospitality suites where they can just hang out and kind of connect with other runners. So it's really cool to be able to just walk by those rooms and see them just hanging out. And last year was crazy with, you know, some of the high profile athletes we had on in the field. So it's just really cool to see those groups milling around and all their teams. So if you are wandering by the Fairmont, you might want to poke your head inside. I am in charge of moving the trophy around over race weekend and throughout the year and our other events. So I bring the trophy over to the Fairmont and place it in the middle of a giant floral arrangement, and it sits there all weekend so the athletes, as they're passing, can think about winning. And it's just, it's a really cool place to be over race weekend.
The Fairmont has the dog too, right? The dog and the dog house, which I love to see. I've been in before and I love to see the dog.
Corey Copley is our unofficial mascot. Joe Fallon, who is Corey's handler and owner, is the doorman there, and he is a industry legend. And when I first started, you know, I became really close with their team. And now every year on Thursday or Friday, we go out, we make Corey a bib, we give her a little finish line outside of her dog house, and we do everything. You know, my team is like, you know, we're laying the little dog's finish line. We'll do anything to make the brand, you know, a part of our work. Everything down to the dog.
It is so fun to see. I just have to ask, on Tuesday, do you take a vacation? Like, I cannot imagine how exhausted.
I know.
You get a vacation after you take some time off.
We have a press conference on Tuesday morning, and then we have a sponsor brunch that I plan. So after that, we all usually go back to our homes and disconnect for a few days, but there is things that need to get done. But yeah, I just put my feet up against the wall and hope that the blood rushes back down my leg.
Well, big props to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the whole team, you know, it is really, I've worked in a lot of places, but it really is a family at the BAA, and we all really care about each other. And, you know, when we bring on new people, the first thing I say is you just got to be willing to help and move things around. Like, if you could pick up a box because you see somebody struggling, and everybody on the team does that. And that's what's really great. And I think it shows in our work. You know, we have 127 years of being a brand. And I think we are just a blip in the history of the marathon. So we really have a big role to do. You know, we have to, you know, we're just a part of a history of this thing that's larger than us. And I think our whole team appreciates that, which is really great.
You know, who else always says that is Dade McGilvery. He often shares that, well, I have the opportunity to, I don't own this race. This race will continue after I'm done with this position, but I feel honored to be part of it. And I can't help but think that, because you just said the same thing, everybody on the team really understands, first and foremost, it's not about the people. It's actually about the race. The race is the institution, and the people are honored to be part of it. I say, though, it is about the people, in the sense that, because the caliber of people that the BAA hires and nurtures to take on the positions that you and Lauren take on, it allows the race to be such a high quality. And I think Boston, by setting the standard, so many other races aspire to be like Boston, and many races are fantastic as a result of the high standard that the BAA sets. And we just always appreciate it. We can't say enough good things about the Boston experience. And you really have taken it as if it was even possible to a whole new level.
It's not a one person job. There is a bunch of people on my team. I feel like sometimes I'm just the project manager of all the events. There's definitely a larger team, and it is like truly a team effort. And thinking about the stewardship of being a part of this race is, we are tasked to implement change. My change is in fun and exciting things, but there is change that we constantly are looking at. And being such an old race, we do need to continue to evaluate ourselves and make sure we're you know, changing with the world and making sure we are growing as an organization. So it is a team effort, and I wouldn't do it if I had to do it alone. That's for sure.
Well, we know you say that, but you also are clearly have a passion for this, and you've done an amazing job. You've got a vision, and we love that you've been able to come to a place where you can put those visions into practice with the help of a lot of people, but always in any organization, the leader sets the tone. So we're grateful on a personal level to you for helping us come into the expo. And we're so excited about our panel with Cherie. And we really appreciate your help with that. And we can't wait to see you. We hope that you'll be there, and we'll get to see you in person. And we really, we know your job is very, very busy right now, and it's about to get busier. So we really appreciate you taking time to talk to us today. And it's so nice to connect. And we've been emailing with you and talking to you and working with you for a while now, but we've never had a chance to connect. And also just to get to hear your story and get to see your passion for what you do. And we really, as racers, as people who've been involved and love this race for so long, it's really cool for us to see. So thank you so much for everything you do and all your hard work. And we will see you in a couple months in Boston. We're like less than 60 days away, I think. So
yeah, the countdown's on. We'll see you guys when you get to Boston. Everyone. Yeah.
Good luck during the last bit of your training before the marathon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Katie.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryan. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.